All right, our next case is 20-2168, Nabani Twin Stars versus Travelers Companies. And now I'm ready, Mr. Carrico. Here you go.
May it please the court, Mr. Herring. I'm Mike Carrico on behalf of the appellant, Nabani Twin Stars. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. In my remarks this morning, I'd like to address three issues, the first being whether the trial court erred when it ruled as a matter of law that its finding of no coverage barred the claim for a bad faith failure to investigate. Second issue I'd like to address is whether under the terms of the policy there was a collapse. And the third issue is whether under the additional coverage for collapse, does that supersede all the policy exclusions? And if the court rules in favor of Nabani on that third issue, then that renders moot any analysis of the efficient proximate cause issue or the nuances of the earth movement exclusion, because the exclusions just wouldn't apply. With regards to the failure to investigate claim, it's our position that that issue is determined by the New Mexico Court of Appeals case of Haygood. And Haygood specifically addressed the issue of whether, if there's a finding of no coverage, the court said, yes, that would bar a bad faith claim for failure to pay. But then the court continued and said that a no coverage finding does not preclude a claim for bad faith failure to investigate. And our facts are a good example of why that is. If the insurance company fails on its duty to investigate the claim, that results in the insured having to pick up that responsibility. And that's what happened here. St. Paul's investigator identified that there might be an issue. If you look at his email to the adjuster in August, he says we don't know the extent to which the water leak might have caused the damage to the building. I'd have to do additional investigative measures to find out. And then they just didn't. And then they disingenuously say in their denial letter that there's no damage caused by the pipe leak. And it's disingenuous because they don't reveal to the insured. The reason we didn't find any evidence is because we didn't investigate that question. So Nabani ended up having to pay the cost to do the bore samples and the soil testing and all the other measures to determine the effect of the water leak. And the other issue that St. Paul failed to investigate was the impact on the structural integrity of the building. And so, in their
counsel, I want to make sure I'm understanding this line of argument. So tell me if I've got this right. If I'm hearing correctly, Haygood, you're saying under Haygood, even if there's no coverage, you still have your bad faith failure to investigate claim. Is that correct so far?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. But if there's no coverage, still trying to understand what your damages might be for failure to investigate. I thought that Nabani engaged Geomat very shortly after the water break and even before St. Paul denied the claim.
Your Honor, the damages, they hired Bob Prindle as an expert to do an in-depth investigation. So Geomat did an initial right after the accident analysis, but that was before, and that information was actually presented to St. Paul, and then they declined to do anything with it. Thereafter, Nabani hired Mr. Prindle, who did in-depth testing, and that's when the soil samples testing occurred, when the core samples testing occurred, when there was analysis of the shift of the building. All that stuff was done by Mr. Prindle, and that was after St. Paul concluded its cursory investigation and right. denied coverage.
And that all happened before the lawsuit?
Correct. Well before the lawsuit, Your Honor. It started approximately 2 years, and Mr. Prindle's work was completed before the lawsuit began.
Thank you.
With that, Your Honor, I'd like to move forward to the collapse issue. And it seems that St. Paul's argument, and I think the district court agreed, that if you focus on the language in the additional coverage for collapse, on what's not a collapse, it says if the building is still standing, there's no collapse. It doesn't matter whether they're sagging or bulging or settling. If the building is still standing, that's not a collapse. The problem is if you take that provision and you also look at the definition of what is a collapse, and the definition of what is a collapse is whether the building has fallen down or caved in, or any part of it has done that with the result that the building can't be occupied for its intended purpose, then that's a collapse. Those two provisions, when you read them together, are ambiguous. And in the line of cases with Malco and Hoban, there's several of them we cited in our brief, they explain why that's ambiguous. Because if you read those two provisions together, if the building's not standing, it renders meaningless the phrase that the building cannot be occupied for its intended purpose, because every building that's reduced to a pile of rubble obviously can't be occupied. And under the law in New Mexico, and if you look at the King versus Travelers Insurance Company, paragraphs 15 and 17, they specifically address this kind of issue. And they say it is the party in the court's responsibility to assign meaning to every phrase of the policy. And here you cannot do that because you can't assign any meaning to occupied for its intended purpose if you adopt this other part of the policy. So that kind of begs the question, well, then what do we do? And the King versus Travelers case answers that question. And it says, if there's an ambiguity, first we have to construe that ambiguity in favor of the insured. The second thing that case says, it says, so what do we do with the offending part that creates the ambiguity? And in King v. Travelers, the court said that the offending part is to be stricken. And in another case, a New Mexico Supreme Court case, just like King was a New Mexico Supreme Court case, in the Knowles case, which is cited in St. Paul's brief, they say the same thing. And then a third in the Federated Insurance versus Century case, if there's an irreconcilable conflict between clauses of the policy, it says that the offensive clause, and I put this in quotes, must be stricken. So if we strike the phrase that what's not a collapse because it's inconsistent with the definition of what is a collapse, then we focus on what is a collapse. And we will acknowledge that we still have, it's our burden of proof to show that we do meet the test for what is a collapse. And there's a three-part test to that. First, we have to show that it's abrupt. And I don't think there's any dispute in this case that the July 17, 2016 water pipe breakage was an abrupt event. The second thing we have to show is that the building has fallen down or caved in. And I would point out to the court that neither of those two terms are defined. The policy doesn't say that it has to fall down 2 inches or 4 inches or 6 inches, or a cave-in has to be to some certain measurement. It just says it has to fall down or cave in. And I'm going to draw the court's attention to some of the exhibits. But if you look at...
sir, it looks like abrupt is modifying falling down or caving and not going to the occurrence, the water pipe. Am I misreading that?
No, I would agree with you, Your Honor, but I would say the event was the water pipe burst and the damage to the building happened immediately thereafter. And if you look at the GeoMat report that's attached as a response in the response to the summary judgment motion, it talks about the difference between the long-term gradual settling that had happened over 10 years and this immediate abrupt damage to the building that happened immediately after the water pipe leak.
How immediate did it occur?
They had done their investigation within a couple weeks of the event.
Oh, I'm sorry, the manifestation of damages.
The water pipe leak was in mid-July. They did their report on the first week of August. So by then it had already happened. And I guess I'd also point out to the court that the St. Paul didn't file a motion on the issue of whether the damage was not abrupt. And so we didn't develop that particular issue in the hearing below. And to get to the damage, and so was there a caving in or a falling down? And I know you don't have these in front of you, but I'll draw your attention to Appendix Volume 1, page 186, which is a photograph of the I-beams in the frame of the building. And you will see that one of them has caved into a degree of looks like an inch or two movement. If you look at appendix page 185, there's a photograph showing that the floor has dropped from the wall approximately a distance of an inch to an inch and a half. If you look at appendix pages 182 through 184, there are photos of a crack in the floor that shows the building moved 2 to 3 inches. So we have evidence of caving and falling. And then the third part is whether or not the building can be occupied for its intended purpose. And the evidence there was, because of the damage, the building could not be occupied because the structural damage impaired the put pressure on the gas and the water lines such that the building couldn't be occupied. The other thing we'd ask the court to consider is that the damage would have been far worse, but for the fact that Nabani immediately installed helical piers to stop further damage. And the mitigation efforts need to be considered in the context of how much was the structural integrity impaired. Very quickly, Your Honor, because I'm running short of my time, the third issue I want to address is if there was a collapse, and that's kind of under the additional coverage for collapse, do policy exclusions apply? And the first thing I'd point out is it doesn't say in the additional coverage that they're subject to exclusions. But more importantly, if you look at two New Mexico Supreme Court cases, again, I'm going to rely on the King versus Travelers Insurance Company case and let me just focus on that one. But it specifically says where there is an express grant of coverage in a named perils policy, and the supplemental coverage for collapse is a named perils policy, if it's specifically addressed and an express grant of coverage, then, and there's an exclusion that would purport to bar that express grant of coverage, that those two things are inconsistent and the exclusions do not apply. Here in the policies, additional coverage for collapse, there's a bulleted paragraph. These are the types of collapses we cover. One of them is if there is a burst of a water pipe that discharges water. That's exactly what happened in our circumstances. So given that there's an express grant of coverage for that issue, the law is well established that exclusions don't apply.
Counsel, yes. I have a question that goes to the relationship among provisions in the policy. And in particular, there is a provision called collapse exclusion. And in that provision, it says that this exclusion doesn't apply to the collapse additional coverage. And my question to you is, why doesn't that show that the policy's other exclusions, including the earth movement exclusion, do apply to the additional coverages?
My first answer would be that construction is directly inconsistent with the rule in King versus Travelers, which deals with this express grant of coverage and exclusions. The second thing I would say is that clause can be explained away or given meaning in another context. And that context is, you have to remember there are two grants of coverage in this policy. There is the general express grant for all perils. And then we have the second grant is additional coverage for collapse. What that phrase that you just referred to is designed to do is to distinguish and say the collapse exclusion still exists, but it only exists with respect to those events that are outside the additional collapse coverage. And then the third thing, place I'd have you look, is the Kings Ridge versus Sagamore insurance case that we cited in our policy. Is a Florida case, exact same identical policy, and they do address the question that you've just raised. And they basically say you don't have to answer that question because under the analysis of a case like Kings versus Travelers, there's not going to be the exclusions are barred regardless. And I've used up most of my time. I'd like to reserve the balance for rebuttal.
All right, you may. All right, let's hear from Travelers, Mr. Herring.
May it please the court, Mr. Jericho. My name is Greg Hearing, and I represent St. Paul Fire and Marine Insurance Company. This court should affirm the grant of summary judgment entered by senior U.S. District Court Judge Brack, which held that the terms of Twin Stars policy unambiguously exclude the loss here. I'd like to begin with Mr. Carrico's argument on coverage, and specifically the argument regarding collapse. Turning to the collapse definition, the policy's definition of collapse plainly excludes the loss alleged here. The policy language on collapse is cited in the record at page 579. Importantly, the definition plainly excludes a building or structure in danger of falling down, buildings or structures that are standing, even though separate from another part, and buildings or structures that are standing, quote, even if it shows evidence of cracking, bulging, sagging, bending, leaning, settling, shrinkage, or expansion. The district court appropriately held that this definition was unambiguous and that on the facts presented on summary judgment, there was no evidence to trigger coverage for collapse under the policy. And this, Your Honors, importantly, is the threshold issue on the determination of collapse coverage. Whether the loss meets the definition of collapse is a threshold issue that has to be determined before the question of whether the building can be used for its intended use or any of the other policy provisions or exclusions may apply. And again, on the record on summary judgment, the district court appropriately held that the policy unambiguously excluded the loss complained of here. Indeed, Twin Stars building remains standing, and the photos referenced by Mr. Carrico show exactly the type of damage that is plainly excluded by the definition, that the floor sank, that there was cracking, that there was bulging. Those items are not within the policy's definition of collapse, and the district court's holding on summary judgment in that regard was appropriate.
If Nabani could show significant structural damage to the building, why wouldn't that get them past summary judgment here?
Your Honor, because two points. Number one, Nabani did not show abrupt damage to the structure. Number two, because the definition of collapse would still require an abrupt falling down or caving in as opposed to significant structural damage. They did not show an abrupt falling down or caving in. Again, the building was standing. And Your Honor, to address the point of abrupt damage, I'd like to go back and address some of the timing concerning this claim and the investigation that Nabani had done, because I think it's important both to the coverage determination and to the argument from Mr. Carrico regarding the bad faith claim. This building was first occupied in May of 2007. In February of 2016, 5 months before the loss was the alleged loss in this case, Twin Stars retained a geotechnical consultant, Geomat. That is in the record at page 109. Then the waterline break occurred in July of 2016, some 5 months after Geomat had been retained. Importantly, before the waterline break occurred, Geomat issued a report in May of 2016, also at page 109 in the record, indicating that the building was suffering significant distress because of settling of the surrounding soils and improper drainage. In short, the earth movement and the structural issues that Nabani now tries to claim under the collapse definition were well known before the underlying waterline break ever occurred. That report was provided to St. Paul as part of its coverage investigation, and the district court appropriately held that St. Paul relied on not only that pre-loss report, but also on the report of its own engineer and an inspection conducted prior to the denial of coverage. And again, for timing, because it's important, the waterline break occurred in July of 2016. The coverage denial occurred in September of 2016. In that time frame, from July to September, St. Paul had the report from Geomat indicating the ongoing structural distress, and it also had the opinion of an in-house engineer. Mr. Carrico referenced that. It's in the appendix at 173. Importantly, the in-house engineer stated, in other words, whether or not the leak affected the building and to what degree are interesting questions, but the proposed repairs were necessary with or without the leak. So to Mr. Carrico's point regarding a failure to investigate, Travelers had ample evidence upon which to base its denial. Again, St. Paul had the Geomat report. It had the opinion from its in-house engineer. Those were all incorporated in the September 2016 denial at page 132. While we're on the investigation, I'd like to turn to the issue of failure to investigate.
So if I may, just for summary purposes, we have an all-risk policy, correct?
That's correct, subject to the exclusions and endorsements, Your Honor.
Right. And then there was additional coverage for the collapse of a building? Go ahead.
Collapse is provided as a coverage within the policy, Your Honor, yes.
So, but excluded from that collapse was a collapse caused by earth movement, correct?
Right, Your Honor.
And you're stating that the earth movement here was not earthquake or landslide or mine subsidence or volcanic eruption, but rather earth sinking, rising, etc., but not including sinkholes.
That is correct, Your Honor. And the record on summary judgment presented to the district court conclusively established that. In addition to the March report or the May report,
established that it was earth sinking or rising, etc.
That's correct, Your Honor. Specifically, that the damage to the building was caused by compaction and improper drainage of the surrounding soil. Notably, that is the exact allegation made by Twin Stars in a lawsuit filed in March of 2017 against the general contractor who constructed the building. That's in the record at page 90. Therein, Twin Stars alleged that the general contractor failed to properly compact the soils underneath the building and that failure to properly compact had resulted in significant movement of the building itself.
In that litigation or in this record, more importantly, are those soil reports in the record?
In the record on summary judgment?
Yes.
Well, Your Honor, I guess if I could request a point of clarification, soil reports from the time of construction or soil reports from the time of the
law? Yes, from construction.
No, Your Honor, the allegation from Nabani in its complaint against the general contractor was that the general contractor failed to conduct an appropriate soils analysis and as a result failed to appropriately compact and account for the soil conditions, which is what led to the earth movement.
And that was that litigation pre-existing the present litigation?
It pre-existed the present litigation, Your Honor. It followed the loss in question. So the loss in question was in July of 2016. The complaint was filed in March of 2017.
The loss in question being defined as the eruption of the water pipe?
Well, the loss is defined by Nabani as the loss of the water pipe. The earth movement in question had been going on, again, according to the lawsuit and the GeoMat report, since the time of the building's original construction.
And the water line was owned by whom?
The water line was owned by Twin Stars, Your Honor. It served the property underlying the parking lot.
Is it connected to a water main of the city?
Your Honor, I would presume so, but that would be a presumption based on what I know of the record.
But the rupture of the line occurred on property belonging to whom again?
It belonged to Twin Stars, Your Honor. The rupture occurred underneath the park outside of the building.
All right. So, okay. I thank you. That really helps me. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to turn to the concept of failure to investigate. The district court appropriately held that Nabani could not assert a standalone claim for bad faith breach of insurance practices based upon the alleged failure to investigate. There are a number of important points here. First, as the district court appropriately held, the argument advanced by Nabani ignores, to quote the district court, decades of New Mexico Supreme Court and District of New Mexico precedent. That's in the order in the appendix at page 592. To the extent that Twin Stars relies on the Haygood case and the O'Neill case for which it cites, it's important to note that the O'Neill case found coverage in favor of the insured, and that Haygood is an outlier which has never been endorsed by the New Mexico Supreme Court. Importantly, even if there was a failure to investigate claim actionable under New Mexico law, there is no evidence on the record presented below on summary judgment as to what Travelers' investigation should have been or how it would have changed the coverage determination.
Again, on that point, did Nabani have an adequate opportunity in district court to address whether St. Paul's investigation was adequate?
Yes, they did, Your Honor. In fact, Nabani raised this issue in its response to the motion for summary judgment, pages 157 to 58 of the record. Travelers addressed that argument in its reply at pages 200 to 201 of the record. And importantly, in its response on summary judgment, Nabani did not advance evidence showing A, what a reasonable investigation would have been, or B, that it would have changed the outcome of Travelers' coverage investigation. Their argument is simply, we had to incur costs to explore the cost of repairing the damage to the building, and because we had to incur those costs, Travelers has somehow breached its obligations under the policy. That's simply not correct. Travelers conducted an appropriate coverage investigation, relying upon its own engineer, Nabani's engineer, which had been retained prior to the loss, and issued a coverage determination. There is no evidence, and there was no evidence presented to the district court judge below, suggesting that an additional investigatory step would have somehow changed that analysis. Your Honors, I'd like to briefly touch on the earth movement because it's been addressed. Importantly, the language there is unambiguous, and there is a significant history of earth movement demonstrated by the record presented to the district court. Indeed, the expert that Mr. Carrico refers to, Mr. Prindle, found earth movement was a cause of the building settling. Importantly, that exclusion is unambiguous that if earth movement is a contributing cause to the loss, that the policy does not provide coverage for any resulting damage. Your Honors, unless there are any additional questions, I will waive the remainder of the argument and pass the time back to Mr. Carrico.
Counsel, could I just ask you to address how the policy in this case differs from the one that was addressed in the case of King versus Travelers?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for the question. The King v. Travelers case did not have the same definition of collapse that we are addressing here today. And the plain language of the definition, the plain language of the collapse definition in this case, again, as found by the district court, excludes the loss complained of. And importantly, the district court's rationale on that on summary judgment noted that if it were to adopt Twin Star's position, it would essentially render the portion of the definition of collapse addressing cracking, bulging, bending, leaning, danger of falling down, etc., that the argument advanced by Twin Stars would render that policy provision moot and that it would improperly rewrite the policy.
I have a hard time trying to conceive of what could cause a building collapse short of a design defect, which I presume is also excluded, other than the very items that you exclude. You know, I presume there's an act of God exclusion. I presume there's an atomic bomb exclusion. I mean, what else could cause the building to collapse? The design or probably everything that's excluded. But I suspect that there is no illusory claim that the policy is illusory. There's no such claim in the complaint. Is that right?
Your Honor, correct. There is no claim that the policy is illusory. Twin Stars raised the argument that the definition of collapse was ambiguous. The district court appropriately rejected that argument and cited a number of cases applying this very exclusion to very similar facts. I direct the court to the YMCA of the Rockies case, which is cited by the district court and deals with very similar facts for the proposition that collapse coverage cannot be used as an attempt to avoid the earth movement exclusion.
What would be a covered collapse?
Was there anything in the complaint that alleged a reasonable expectation claim?
No, Your Honor, nor was that such an argument made on in response to Traveler's motion for summary judgment. Judge Timkovich.
So I may have stepped on Judge Timkovich's question. I apologize.
Go ahead. Are you done, Judge?
I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're almost done. But what's a covered collapse?
Yeah, Your Honor, I see that my time has expired. If I may answer your question.
Please.
A covered collapse would be an abrupt falling down or caving in. It could be caused by termites, could be caused by an unknown structural failure that leads to a collapse or caving in. Fortunately, that's not the issue presented here. The issue presented here is whether the earth movement at issue can be considered a collapse. And the answer is that it cannot.
All right. I think we understand your argument. Mr. Carrico, you had it. I'll give you 60 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. On the issue of the pre-existing problems in the earlier lawsuit, that issue is addressed at, if you look at Appendix 161, the GeoMat report, it specifically says that the immediate recent damage was likely caused by the water leak, not caused by the prior event. So as a, there's a matter of fact that's disputed on that particular issue. And I'd also ask you to look at Appendix 166, paragraph 31, which is Mr. Prindle's report that shows that right under where the water leak was, the soil was wetted to a depth of 68 feet. That gives you some idea of the volume of water that was discharged. It's not at that depth at other portions of the building, which also shows that it's a completely separate
event. Counsel's argument that the structural damage preceded the water damage and that the proof of that is your investigation. I mean, that's a very strong argument. What's your response?
It's a fact question, Your Honor. There are two separate events, and we would agree that we've never made a claim for the gradual settling that occurred before. Our claim is specific to the abrupt damage that occurred as a result of the water leak. And it's our position. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What is your proof of the abruptness of the damage, the acceleration of the collapse, as it were?
I'll give one example is the section I just cited to you in the GeoMat's second report. They specifically state that the recent damage was likely not a result of the gradual settling, but rather the recent water pipe leak. So that's a fact, and that is a very detailed fact question, but it's not one that's ripe for summary judgment. And I've exhausted my time.
Any other questions from the panel? Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your arguments. They were helpful, and you're excused, and the case shall be submitted.